traditional heading of Isaac. So over the past few weeks, we've seen how dramatically the life of Jacob has changed. This began some 20 years ago when he left his home in Beersheba and has now arrived in Haran, having met Rachel, having stayed with Uncle Laban for a month, and then agreeing to work for Laban for 7 years as an initial dowry for Rachel, then being tricked into marrying her sister Leah, and then marrying her, and then working a second dowry for Rachel for another 7 years. And then we chronicled the birth of his 12 children through Leah and Rachel in the two maids, Zilpah and Bilhah, over that 7 year period of that second dowry. So he now has 6 sons and 1 daughter to Leah. He has 4 sons to Bilhah and Zilpah. And he has the 1 son, Joseph, who is married to his beloved Rachel. So in an attempt to get established in his own life and in his own home, Jacob has then agreed to work for Laban for an undetermined amount of time in this unusual animal birthing contract where Jacob would own the oddly colored sheep and goat. These would become his. And in this unusual birthing agreement, the number of animals that would become Jacob's should be relatively small, because these oddly colored animal births are generally very rare. But because of the supernatural work of God, and because God told Jacob what it was he was going to do, Jacob was able to plunder and outgrow Laban's herds through the sovereign work of the Lord. This resulted in Jacob becoming a very wealthy man, so much so that chapter 30 ends by telling us this. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Jacob became so wealthy that he was able to sell these oddly colored animals and acquire for himself servants and camels and donkeys. So it is believed that this took place over a period of six years, and now after a total period of 20 years in Haran, it is time for Jacob to leave. So chapter 31 is divided into 4 major scenes or sections. The first one is Jacob's decision to leave, that is chronicled in verses 1 through 16. The second is Jacob's secretive departure, which is in 17 to 21. Laban pursues Jacob and then catches up with him in verses 22 to 44. And then Jacob and Laban come to a peaceful settlement in verses 45 through 55. So these 4 scenes are essentially a very lengthy series of conversations broken up by smaller sections of narrative. And today we're only going to look at the first section because of what's involved in this section. So in the ongoing outline, we're looking at letter L, and that is Jacob's departure. We're going to read together verses 1 through 16, and then we'll break it down together. Now, Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth." Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field and said to them, "I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, 'The striped shall be your wages,' then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me." And it came about at that time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, "Jacob," and I said, "Here I am." He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. Rachel and Leah said to him, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Now in this conversation and in this narrative, there are several important things. We looked at a little bit of this last time, and we'll get a little bit of a more detailed description as it fits in this section today. So under letter L, number one, we look at the decision to flee. Jacob's position within the family has been reversed. If you remember, when Jacob ventured from Beersheba and came to Haran or Paddan Aram, he had absolutely nothing. Nothing more than the clothes on his back. You remember, he was so poor that on the first night that he camped out, he had nothing to put under his head except for a rock that he found, and that rock became the pillar that he anointed when God appeared to him in that theophany when the heavens opened up and the angels ascended and descended on the ladder. That is the pillar that God references again here. Jacob had absolutely nothing. The once penniless brother-in-law has now amassed great wealth. And as we see, Laban's family is not happy. This leads to, letter A, family dissension. Verse 1, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and for what belonged to our father, he has made all his wealth. Now, we haven't really heard anything about Laban's sons. We had a reference to them last week, and I'm going to refer to that in just a moment. But here, there's a reference to them again. We have no idea how many there are, but they are unhappy because they see their future inheritance dwindling away, and it now falls under the ownership of Jacob. It has been transferred from Laban to Jacob, and they don't like that at all. From their perspective, based upon the Hebrew grammar that is being used, Jacob has taken away their father's livestock. What was once their father's now belongs to Jacob. It carries an accusatory tone of cheating or stealing. Now, if you remember, at the agreement that Laban and Jacob made, Jacob was very, very clear. All of the normally colored animals are yours, and only the oddly colored animals that are born from these normally colored animals, those will be mine. And if there's any mixture of normally colored animals in with my oddly colored animals, you will know that I've stolen them. But that's not what has taken place. Nonetheless, Laban's sons believe that somehow, in some way, Jacob has stolen Laban's livestock from them. All they know is that Jacob has prospered at their expense, and they don't like it. But this dissension is not limited to just the sons. As we see, it is extended to Laban also. Verse 2, Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. So over this six-year period where Jacob is now being employed as the shepherd over the flock, not working under a dowry agreement any longer, and he's doing so with little gain in the way of wages from just the expected newly born, oddly colored flock, Laban has also seen Jacob's wealth dramatically outpace his own. If you go back and look at that word choice in verse 34, and I've forgotten what it is. I've got to go back and see what it is. Verse 34, exceedingly prosperous. It's that idea of explosive growth. Laban has also seen Jacob's fortune outpace his own in such a way that Laban is not happy. So his attitude towards Jacob has also changed, and Laban is also angry and frustrated, and he is taking this out on Jacob. Now, throughout all of Laban's dealings with Jacob, he has treated him poorly, and I would say that Laban has been very two-faced with Jacob. On the one hand, he plays up to Jacob, playing to the role, the relationship role that that uncle and nephew would have. And then in the last labor agreement, name your wages and whatever you name, I will give to you. He plays up to the favor of Jacob, but always treats him poorly, but he can no longer pretend that things are well. And the two-faced Laban has only a single face now, and that is one of anger and resentment. So Laban, like his sons, have no perspective of God's blessings upon Jacob, even though Laban himself acknowledged God's blessings upon Laban's growth of flock as a result of Jacob's work. So if you go back to the labor agreement between Laban and Jacob, when Jacob was going to work for Laban under the agreement of this oddly colored flock that was going to be born, in Genesis 30, 27, Laban says, If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. But Laban has totally lost that perspective, because now all he sees is that Jacob is prospering and Laban is not. His attitude does not reflect that previous recognition, which of course proves that these words spoken in 30:27 were disingenuous at best. He's only playing up to the favor of Jacob, trying to get him to stay so that he can continue to take advantage of him. So Jacob is very wealthy. This was not what Laban expected, and this was not what Laban wanted. He always wanted Jacob to be needy, and he always wanted Jacob to be underneath him. But because the fortunes have changed, there is great family dissension between Laban and the sons and against Jacob. This familial dissension leads to, letter B, God's direction. We see this in verse 3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So the time has come, 20 years in total, that Jacob had lived in Haran or Paddan Aram, and it was time for Jacob to return home. Now, as I read through this, I had to wonder how long would Jacob had stayed there had God not said, it is time for you to leave. We have no idea. Jacob apparently didn't have it in himself to leave on his own, but God has seen fit to tell Jacob that it is now time for him to leave. So this command to return home is very interesting. Think about this. Jacob is to return to the land of his fathers. The land that was once unknown to Abraham is now being called the land of Jacob's fathers. Jacob is going back to his relatives when Abraham was initially called to leave his relatives. Look at how much has changed in just two generations. Abraham left for a land unknown to him. Abraham left his relatives, and now here is Jacob going back to the land of his fathers, going back to his relatives. Abraham had one child. Isaac had one child. Jacob now has 12 children. He's going back to the land of his fathers, which is setting up the environment where God is going to fulfill the last of the three promises that were initially made to Abraham all the way back in Genesis 12, which will not be fulfilled until Moses leads the nation out of Egypt, and that is the promise of land. Land, descendants, and blessing. Jacob has the descendants, Jacob has this great blessing, and now he is going back to what is now called the land of his fathers, back to his relatives. A lot has changed in just these two generations. Finally, God says, I will be with you. It echoes the words of the theophany back at Bethel 20 years earlier when Jacob met a God that he didn't know, and he heard these unimaginable promises of land and descendants and a great blessing. Now Jacob has seen the promises come true, and he should have the faith to trust that God is going to be with him. Number two in the outline is Jacob's explanation. So he knows that he has to go based upon the friction in the family and the directive that he's heard from God, and now it's time to explain why it's time to go. He doesn't want to go alone, although he could. He wants and he needs his family to go with him. So he wants to explain to Rachel and to Leah why he plans to leave, and he enlists their support. So letter A, he's going to give his rationale. We see this in verse 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field. So this seemingly unimportant setting is very telling about the severity of the division within the family. It is so significant that Jacob can't risk anyone in the family overhearing this conversation. It can't take place in the home or in the home compound. It has to take place in secret out in the field of pasture for fear someone is going to hear. Because if someone hears, there is likely going to be some kind of a consequence that is going to come against Jacob and probably against the daughters. Verse 5, and Jacob said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. So Jacob begins this conversation by contrasting Laban's relationship with Jacob with God's protection over him. It's very, very important that Jacob makes this contrast. Laban is no longer friendly with Jacob, but God has always protected Jacob. He wants his wives to understand that. And God has protected Jacob in ways that he cannot fully recognize. From the very beginning of this conversation with his wives, Jacob is expressing his faith in God, and he credits God with his blessings. He says, the God of my father has been with me. He attributes everything that he has, and everything that has happened to him to the reality that the God of his father has been with me. Next, he identifies Laban's duplicity. We aren't told anything about this, about how Laban has dealt with him during this six-year period after the agreement was made to manage the flock for wages. But we do know that Laban violated the agreement on the very first day by not allowing Jacob to separate out the oddly colored animals for his own breeding purposes, which was a part of that initial agreement. So Laban separated those animals on his own and sent them away with his sons, and he separated them away from Jacob on a 3 days journey, which was in violation of the agreement. Going back to that agreement in Genesis 30, 35, and 36, so he, Laban, removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, everyone with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. That was not the agreement. Jacob was supposed to get the oddly colored animals and was supposed to breed them, and the oddly colored animals were supposed to become his. But Laban takes those away from Jacob, separates them 3 days' journey, and all that Jacob has are the normally colored animals through which the oddly colored animals would breed, would be bred, and those would become his. So Laban violated the agreement, making it even more difficult for Jacob to earn any wages from their agreement. Now here, Jacob provides additional detail that is not included for us. Verse 6, you know that I have served your father with all my strength. So Jacob's work ethic is without question. Both Rachel and Leah would be able to verify that. After all, he worked 14 years as a dowry for Rachel, and during that time, Laban's flocks have flourished under his care. All Jacob received in terms of wages is that a normal employee would have been paid. Now, he did get Rachel, and he did make that agreement, but that would not have been a normal agreement for an uncle and a nephew. In these next three verses, Jacob outlines how Laban attempted to cheat him and how God had faithfully protected him. Verses 7 and 8 says, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. So in the original agreement, Jacob granted ownership of all the oddly colored sheep or goats. Since they were expected to be rare, Laban assumed that he was going to get a good deal. But because God was sovereignly in control, there were a large number of oddly colored animals being born. Every time Laban changed the terms of the contract, through God's sovereign control, the animals being born met the terms of whatever Laban changed them to. So if they were supposed to be spotted, they were all being born spotted. Laban didn't like that. Well, now they're going to be born striped. So now in God's sovereign control, they were all to be born striped. So Laban continued to change the terms, and every time he did, through God's sovereign control, all the animals were born according to the way Laban changed the terms. Well, Jacob had no control over that. There's nothing Jacob could have done to control how the animals were going to be born. Even though in the previous narrative, he was peeling off the bark on the branches, creating stripes, according to a superstitious practice, that had absolutely nothing to do with it. So what Jacob is explaining is your father continued to try to cheat me, and every time he did, God protected me. Your father changed the terms, and every time he changed the terms, God orchestrated that the animals would be born according to those terms. Now Jacob says Laban did this 10 times. 10 is a symbolic number of completeness, which means Laban did it again and again. Every time Laban did it, God allowed the animals to be born according to the terms that Laban had established. Verse 9, thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. That is Jacob's assessment. Any rational person would have said, God did something really unusual here. There's not anything you, Jacob, or any other man could have done that would have created these animals to be born this way. And in ancient Mesopotamia, there were any number of false gods who could have potentially been given credit for being able to do that, but there were no gods that existed who could have been given credit for doing something like that. So this is a divine transfer of ownership, punishing Laban for his treatment of Jacob, and this fulfills God's promise to Abraham all the way back in Genesis chapter 12, when God says, I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. Now, why is that connection made? Well, because Abraham is the man of covenant with God. And that line of covenant is traced from Abraham to Isaac, from Isaac to Jacob. Jacob, whose name will be changed to Israel. Whoever curses Israel is cursing Jacob and Isaac and Abraham and God, the author of that covenant. So God honors the covenant he made with Abraham by cursing Laban for his treatment of Jacob. Now, we're not ever told of a specific curse that Laban made against Jacob, but his treatment of Jacob is absolutely a curse. After all, Jacob is a nephew of Laban, and he never ever treated Jacob like a true servant, let alone a flesh and blood nephew. So Laban has cursed Abraham by treating Jacob with contempt and by cheating him for over 20 years. This is what Jacob is explaining to Rachel and Leah, and what they are able to see through Jacob's explanation is a divine transfer of ownership from their father's flock into Jacob's own hands. Letter C, God's sovereignty. Jacob now goes on to explain this in different terms. These four verses are the most important in this chapter because they explain what Jacob has been doing in his breeding practices and why. Now, as I mentioned last week, this dream, theophany, preceded Jacob's agreement with Laban, and it provided for Jacob the assurance that God was with him. Now, the reason we can say that this preceded Jacob's agreement with Laban is through scholarship and their analysis of the Hebrew language and how they understand the way that all of this is put together. The way that Jacob is explaining this is in what he saw that created his idea of putting into practice the superstitious idea of creating these striped branches, and that would create these oddly colored animals. I can't go back and review everything that I said in last week's message, but that is the understanding that scholars have, is that this theophany took place before Jacob and Laban entered in this agreement about these oddly colored animals. So as a means of explaining to his wives why it is time to leave, Jacob is anxious to show that the success of his breeding was the result of God's blessing and God's revealing of this plan, not his own genius and not his good luck, and really not even his own superstitious practice. So here it is in verses 10 through 13. And it came about at that time when the flock were mating, that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So this dream happened before they entered into the agreement, which is why this is why Jacob agreed to all the oddly colored animals being his wages, because of what he saw in the dream, and because of God's assurance that this is what was going to happen, and some detail that we are not given through Jacob's recounting of the dream to Rachel and Leah. Verse 10 is the vision Jacob saw. Verse 11 and 12 is the explanation of that vision with some of the detail left out, but it is assumed from verse 8 with the increase of the multicolored animals being born. And then verse 13 contains the command for Jacob to leave. Now let me pause and say this. I don't believe that we are told of every theophany that existed in the lives of God's people. I just don't believe that. I also don't believe that we are given every detail of every theophany that is recorded in the Bible. In Jacob's excitement, he is retelling his wives why it is time to leave, and it is likely that he has left out some of the detail, and in the way he is explaining the vision, some of it is assumed in what has happened in verse 8 with the speckled and the striped and the mottled, which is spotted animals, that have now been booming through the birth of the normally colored animals. So this is what he is telling his wives. This is what I saw in a dream, and this is what God has told me, and this is what has happened. And look at all these animals God has blessed me with. They've heard what has happened, and they have seen this as a divine transfer of ownership because of the way Laban has treated Jacob. Now, verse 13 is the most significant verse, which affirms this to be the same God that Jacob encountered at Bethel, where he made that altar and where God promised that he would bring Jacob back to his home. So the decision to leave Laban at this time is not Jacob's, but it is God's. The transfer of ownership of Laban's flock is not due to Jacob's trickery. It is God's divine transfer of ownership. Now, in this passage, there are two stated commands for Jacob to leave. One is in verse 3 at the very beginning, and there is another in verse 13 that we've just read. Now, it is unclear if these are two separate commands, with one being preparatory and the other in verse 13 being immediate, or if this was a single command and the time to leave now becoming very apparent to Jacob because of the hostility that he is now facing within the family. It is unclear to the scholars. We don't know if there's two separate visions or dreams or appearances from God, based upon the Hebrew language and the way the linguists understand this. They can't say one dream or two. But what we do know is that God spoke and Jacob is obeying. He is conveying what he has heard from God to his wives. Either way, it is Jacob's time to leave, and it is not Jacob's decision. It is a directive from God, and Jacob is going to obey. Number 3 in the outline, the wives agree to leave. Now, as hard as life has been for Jacob over these 20 years, we get a sense here that it has been just as hard for Rachel and Leah. and perhaps even harder, because they're not nephews, they're not nieces, they're daughters. Not only do they agree to leave with Jacob, but they add reasons of their own. This is seen with the rhetorical question that they ask Jacob here in verse 14. Rachel and Leah said to him, "Do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house?" That's not a question where they are asking Jacob and expecting him to answer. It is a question they ask where they know Jacob knows the answer to that question is absolutely not. They know that answer is no, just as Jacob knows there's no inheritance for him either. For as much bitterness that has existed between these two sisters over gaining Jacob's love, over birthing his children, and trying to establish a role of prominence within the family, they can come to an agreement on this one thing, and that is their father has treated them horribly. And they want nothing more than to leave this home, and they'll come together on this one thing. There's three reasons that they express their willingness to leave. Letter A, they have been regarded as foreigners. We see this in the first part of verse 15. Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? I want you to think about that. These are his daughters. Imagine feeling like your father treated you as if you were a foreigner. A foreigner is one that is considered to be an outsider or an alien, one that does not belong in the land, let alone in the home. Now, Laban treated Jacob, his nephew, like an employee, but he treated his daughters like they were foreigners. This is expressed in the fact that they have no portion or inheritance in their father's house. Additionally, in letter B, they are regarded as property. The second part of verse 15. For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Now, this is a reference to the traditional dowry that was paid when a daughter was given in marriage. In ancient times, a good portion of that dowry would go to the daughter and the establishment of a home. Now, Jacob did not pay a traditional dowry. He had nothing to pay a dowry with. But what he did do was he worked for 14 years. And although he would have been paid some kind of a wage, and that would have generated some kind of tangible property for Jacob, his 14 years of work for Laban did generate tangible wealth for Laban, as Laban himself verified when he and Jacob were coming to some kind of a new wage agreement when he was going to shepherd the flock for Jacob's new wage. But whatever gain was generated as a result of Jacob's 14 years worth of work has not materially benefited his daughters at all. In this sense, whatever that dowry would have been has been completely consumed by the father. And in this sense, he has sold them. And whatever that gain was monetarily has been consumed by the father. He's regarded them as nothing more than something by which he can profit. That's the way they feel about their father as his daughters. Now, in ancient times, it wasn't completely uncommon for women to feel like property, to feel like they didn't have great value or worth. But I would contend that the way these daughters felt was pretty rare. Probably not alone, But it speaks to the depravity that exists within Laban's heart. Greedy, manipulative, deceitful, and a true user of people in general. The third reason that they are ready to leave, and let her see here, is that reparations have been made by God. This is interesting, verse 16. They say, surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. That is the strongest indictment that they could make against their father. In their estimation, what Jacob has gained is divine justice for what their father has done to them and the way their father has treated them. You will note the mention of our children. It demonstrates the women's zeal for their own heirs, distinguishing their family from that of their fathers and their brothers. It is a line that is drawn in the sand, and their allegiance is solely to their husband and to their children. Make no mistake about it, when they get ready to pack up and leave, there is no looking back. There is no regret. There is no second thought. They are ready to look forward, and they are going to be with Jacob for now and forevermore. This is a critical juncture in Jacob's life. And I would imagine that as he hears these words from these two women, and as he thinks about these 12 children that he now has, and as he thinks about the journey that he has been on, I don't know that he really understands the challenge ahead of him, but I would venture to say that he is going to be forced to trust in God in ways that he has not since he left 20 years earlier. And I would venture to say that when he left 20 years earlier, he had no clue what he was about to face. But this journey is not just about him going to find a bride. This is about him and this new family that he has just established, and the fulfillment of the promises that this God has made to him, that he has seen becoming fulfilled right before his very eyes. Jacob should have the faith that he needs, but the question is, does he, and will he live it out? Well, we're going to see some of the challenges that he faces, and I think it reminds us of our own challenge of the faith that we should have in our own lives as we continue to encounter various difficulties and challenges in our own lives. You know, we look back at God's faithfulness, not only over the past 20 years, but some of us over a much, much longer period of time. And we look at the faithfulness of God to all of these biblical characters, and we come to a crisis, we come to a difficulty, and we often fret and worry and wonder and get anxious and excited over, what's God going to do? Is God going to work? Is God going to take care of it? And it's just ridiculous how little faith we truly possess when the rubber meets the road. So this serves as a reminder for us in what Jacob's about to face and whatever we are about to face, that which we don't yet know. Would you bow with me in prayer, please?